You know, you think about LeBron and everything, and MVP.
Oh, he's a f***ing dude. Don't even get me started.
I cannot stand Philly fans. I love Eagle fans. I respect more. It's ridiculous. I can't wait for them to get bounced.
Oh, seriously. I gotta admit, I love the Phillies. They bounced the Dodgers out 2 years ago.
Had to go there.
I love them.
We're kind of all trying to figure out who's gonna roll out the red carpet for the Yankees right now.
No, the Reds, man.
They got a guy who throws like 150 miles an hour.
Plus, me and Junkie are a couple of old hippie communists. So, you know, the Reds, you know.
Andy, you said you were watching a UConn game for a quarter and a half. What the hell were you watching?
I was playing tennis, like, somewhere in between, like, those games.
You're not watching college football, and instead you're playing tennis. That's an atrocious shot by you.
The games were on all day. You weren't glued to your baby set for 12 hours on Saturday either. No one is.
I was in Baltimore, you clown.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
And there is a special feeling in the air in New York City today, and that feeling comes from not only the crowded, polluted, very stinky streets of New York, but it also comes from the excitement generated by the New York Jets, who've been on a bit of a tear lately, 7-2 in the AFC, and coming from a very nice come-from-behind win against the Houston Texans. It is the Jets Roundtable, the great Jets Roundtable we will have today. I'm your host, Dave Medina, and today we are joined by two very illustrious voices of the MikeFrancesa.com. Let me introduce them one at a time. First, from the Checker Football Pick'em podcast, we have our friend Robert in Virginia, and he is obviously a great Jets fan, and he's here in the city. Welcome, Robert. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
All right. And now also joining us on the program, making his debut here in the city on Locks of the Week Radio from Long Island, he is Gator. Now, what was your real name again, sir?
That would be Andrew in Long Island.
Andrew in Long Island, who happened to be at that AFC Championship game against the Colts last season. And that must have been quite an experience. Great to have you on the program, Andrew.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you got it. All right, guys.
Yeah, so, was it that game, as a matter of fact? Go ahead.
No, go for it. I'm interested to hear about this.
Well, you know, it's interesting, that game, because that game, if you think about that game, the Jets' problems started because they really couldn't throw the ball downfield, which is why this year I think you've seen them open it up more.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's a huge, huge boon for the Jets. And you know, I think what we noticed about the game game on Sunday, and then obviously throughout the season, is that they now have the tools to do so. It was just instilling the confidence in Mark Sanchez to get the ball out there. And it looks like they're starting to trust him more and more. I think it's a good point. Robert, what do you think about the Jets' passing offense nowadays as compared to what they were doing about maybe a year ago at this time?
It's like night and day. I mean, last year, it wasn't only that the passing offense couldn't move the ball and couldn't score. They were turning the ball over, and it was turning into 6 points going the other way. And before the season, I just thought that if Sanchez could, you know, eliminate the mistake to make a few plays and just not have as many negative plays as they had last year, they would be in much better shape. And which you saw a bit in the playoffs, which was eliminating a lot of the mistakes and then making a play every now and then. What you're seeing this year is a couple of steps beyond that, where even on days when the defense isn't playing well, when the running game isn't working, the passing game is actually able to win games for the Jets now, whereas last year not only were they incapable of winning games through the air, but the passing game cost them 4 or 5 games. So it's a complete turnaround from a year ago.
It's also a complete turnaround from week one, as you remember. And they had probably one of the worst offensive games that you may have ever seen, and against the Ravens, no less. But to have them come from that to getting these, not only one, but I think you could even say it was back-to-back big-time touchdown-scoring drives to win games. It's a big feeling.
Dave, the Ravens thing I put fully on the coaching staff, and I put on Rex, and Rex has as much as admitted it. He put the shackles on them. He was intimidated by his old defense in Baltimore, and he basically told Sanchez and Schottenheimer, don't screw this up. Don't make any mistakes that are going to cost the game, and the defense will win it. And I think that they learned an important lesson from that game, that they had set a goal of winning a championship, and they were never going to reach that goal playing that way. And so while you never want to lose a football game, I actually think they learned a lesson, and they're now in a totally different place now.
Yeah, I think so too. And Andrew, if you look at this team, the way that they've progressed over the every week, you know, basically, you see improvement in different areas. And one improvement I think that's kind of striking to me is their ability to take a punch and then come back. I mean, when you saw how the Texans tied the game up, did you think that they were going to come back and win it?
No. This time I thought we were dead, but, you know, they came through. Who knows how they did? They did it in four plays, which is what you see out of Peyton Manning, which you see out of Tom Brady. You have to be able in this league, if you look at who won the Super Bowl last year, you know, a high-flying offense, you have to be able to have that switch to turn on at any time. If you do not, you will lose a game. So, you know, I did not think that they were going to come back and do it in four plays, but we did. I was at the game. We did sit in our seat and watch it. So it did happen, believe it or not, again, for the third straight time. Go figure.
Yeah, that's the way the football works. It's just a crazy game. Dave in the City, Locks of the Week Radio with Andrew in Long Island and Robert in Virginia. I almost said Justin on Long Island, but he's your other compatriot in you know him. He must be seething right now, right?
He's an interesting guy to have on a Jets roundtable.
I would love to hear from him tonight. This would be funny. It would be great. Oh, man. Now, is this a rivalry with the Giants and Jets?
It was a terrible football day for him yesterday, by the way. His Super Bowl pick before the year was the Bengals and the 49ers, and you look at what those two teams yesterday, and then the Jets won the way they did, and then the Giants lost the way they did. I can imagine he was probably kicking a few puppies yesterday.
Meanwhile, you should see the Monday night game coming up in a couple of weeks is 49ers at Arizona. How about that one?
Oh, my God.
What a disaster.
I'll be catching up on the DVR that night.
Absolutely. It's supposed to be a hockey game.
I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to go out of the house for that one. Jeez Louise, that's as bad as it gets. Who decided to schedule that game? I mean, you had to be smart enough to think that the Arizona was taking a step back. And the Niners, I mean, that was something that, you know, they couldn't help that one. But still, having that game,
well,
unbelievable.
I think that the Niners were a lot of people's pick for starting the year. A lot of people picked the Niners to go all the way.
Yeah.
You know, I was really high on the 49ers before the season, and looking back on it, I should just not be allowed to talk about football in any way to think that a team with Alex Smith and Mike Singletary was going somewhere.
It's a tough pill to swallow, but at the same time, I mean, you've seen teams with good defenses overcome bad quarterbacks to win games before. I mean, we're seeing it with the Bears this year, basically. I mean, even though Cutler is supposed to be much more. And, you know, going back to the Jets, it seemed like that was going to be the game plan to start. But we're starting to see, really, some of the intangibles of Mark Sanchez take place. His leadership skills, for example. Being able to not quit when the team is down. I just think that's very valuable for a team, and it can't even be calculated, to be honest with you. And going back to Andrew now, we swing it to you. You know, you compare the two. I mean, do you think this is going to prepare him better for the playoffs, the way he's been able to come back in games like this? And it's hard to, I hate to beat a drum like this, but it's true. It makes a big difference. Do you think this is good to really make him grow for the playoffs?
For sure, because you're able to do it, you have to have done it already. The more you do it, the more you're going to be able to do it. But the thing that's impressing me about him lately is his pocket presence, his pocket awareness, and the way he's able to now feel the rush and take those few steps, whether it be, you know, forward or sideways, or he seems to have the presence now to avoid the rush but still look downfield and make the play. You know, he didn't have that last year. He was kind of like a deer in the headlights a little bit. But, you know, he's progressing. You know, the ends of games are now amazing, and you can really attribute that to Santonio. I mean, how can you not? He's done it three times in the last three games. The guy's unbelievable. He's a phenomenal player. You know, what a steal that was to get him for a fifth-round draft pick. And you got to sign this guy as well as Braylon. But, yeah, it's all about Sanchez. There's no doubt about it. What he's done in the last 3 weeks, he stepped up huge.
Yeah. Any concerns about the running game? This goes out to either of you.
Do with PNC.
Well, you know, look, I think you have to be a little bit concerned about the fact that Sean Green just can't seem to hold on to the football. Hopefully they can get that fixed. And you got to hope. I mean, when he had the fumble problems in the opener against Baltimore, it really seemed to take him out of the offense for about 4 or 5 weeks, a combination of the coaches not really trusting him that much. And even when he did get in the game, he seemed so concerned about holding onto the ball that he wasn't really running hard. And so Tomlinson really had to carry the load. I don't think the Jets can afford to have another 4 or 5 week stretch where Tomlinson carries the load, or they're going to pay the price in January. The idea is to try to get them the ball an equal amount of times and have both of these guys pretty fresh. But I also think part of the reason that Sanchez has put up the numbers that he has is teams are still defending the run. And so I think maybe if Sanchez continues to do this, defenses will really have to respect the Jets' passing game more, and that may open things back up for the running game a little bit.
Yeah, that's certainly what you want.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that Green, you know, his style, he has the same style as, like, you know, Hillis or Jacobs, which is to, you know, lower your head and crush the guy. And that style is conducive to fumbling. You know, those are the guys that always fumble. The guys that try to make a move and try to avoid getting hit are the guys that hold on to the ball. And the guys like that are always going to have a fumbling problem, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can't argue with that, honestly. You know, you got to be... There's just certain ways that you hold it onto the football that would be conducive to security and whatnot. We're talking with Andrew in Long Island and Robert in Virginia in the city on the Jets Roundtable tonight. And if you want to join in, 424-258-9251. I got a surprise for you guys. I hear that Ole Reilly, that's Dave in Queens, will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. So we should be having some more fun with that. This day, we couldn't get Dan Heck on with us, and I just quickly want to give out him a shout-out and his family, who are now, at this juncture, expecting a child. So congratulations to Dan Heck and his great contributions and music and here on the show. I mean, isn't that great? I mean, that is just amazing news, I heard.
Terrific news. Joining those of us who are parents, he's a great guy. You know, I've talked to him a bit, even, you know, off the board. He's a tremendous guy, and I couldn't be happier for him and his wife.
Yeah.
Here,
indeed. It's going to be good times, and I'm sure, you know, now he echoes the sentiment of a lot of Jets fans in that I think going into games, and this is just because of the history, that you get a little pessimistic about the outcome, but do you feel that tide changing now when you go into games? Do Jets fans now feel more confident about a game? Like, oh, yeah, we're going to win this game, you know, no matter who they're playing.
Well, I felt that way yesterday.
I think we're going to win, and we're thinking when is going to be the week where we have a nice, easy win. We thought it was this week, you know, the rocking chair game was 23-7, and then, you know, it happened. No one could predict that was going to happen, a total breakdown of the defense. But it happened, you know, and they came back from it. So more power to them.
Yeah, definitely.
One story, Dave, I think that really encapsulates the way Rex Ryan has changed the culture. I was watching, I can't remember whether it was ESPN or NBC or one of these highlight shows, and whenever my team wins a game, I generally tend to watch these highlight shows about 3,000 times to watch them, the highlights of them winning. But they were showing the highlights, and they showed the Sanchez interception, and then showed the Houston fumble, and the anchor doing the highlights said, and that should put the ball game away, but this is the Jets. And for my whole life, hearing the words, that should be the end of the game, but this is the Jets, always meant that they were about to show some horrible collapse where the Jets found an improbable way to lose a game. And now it means that the Jets are finding improbable ways to win the game. And that's just completely different from my whole experience as a Jets fan. And people can get on Rex Ryan, and certain radio hosts can call him a clown, but that's what Rex Ryan and the rest of his team has done this year, is they've completely turned the Jets' history on its head.
Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's definitely, you can see he has a few weaknesses in-game, you know, he'll make you scratch your head sometimes, but, you know, look at the way he builds a defense. He's a teacher, he's a builder of defenses. You know, for how long have we not had a good defense? Forever, you know. Even when we had the sack exchange, our defense was good, not great. But now, you know, we have a great defense. We're not even playing well. And what are we, 6th-ranked defense? And, you know, so you figure that should get better. The weather gets cold. Teams are going to come in here and It's all about defense, baby. Defense wins.
Yeah, and defense can be the ground stone. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, you got to have a good defense to win a championship. And people will talk about how it's a passing game now, but you know, you get the winter month, and it's still going to, you're still going to need solid work between the trenches and a defense that can shut down a situation near the end of a game. So this brings up an interesting question now. With the Jets having so many close games in the last month, do you worry? I mean, I guess I kind of said this already, but do you anticipate this could end up hurting them at some point because of the fact that they can't keep guys rested due to the basically put teams away? I mean, does that worry you? Does that worry you in the sense that if they did the same thing against a better team, that they might not be able to come back? How much do you think this plays into the Jets' abilities defensively going forward? And I'll start with Robert on this one.
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword. I think that, you know, whenever you can't put a team away and you let them hang around, you put yourself in a position where a bad bounce of the ball or a bad call can go against you and you can lose a game that way. But on the other hand, you know, their two losses this year have been by a combined 10 points. So they keep themselves in every game and give themselves a chance to win. And I think that, you know, the biggest thing about not being able to put a team away is really in the regular season when you're playing against teams that you should beat and it costs you wins that could hurt playoff positioning. Once you get to the playoffs, you're really not going to play teams that you're that much better than. And so all the games are going to be close in the playoffs. They're all going to come down to, you know, to a one-score game. And having the kind of experience and having these guys who've shown time and time again that no matter what the situation, they're in it and they can find a way to win the game, I think that's going to help them in January. You're not going to be in a situation where you're so much better than your opponent that you're just looking to put them away, at least not this year. The top four or five teams in the AFC are all pretty much even. It's just going to come down to who plays better on that given day. And the Jets are finding ways to win games, and it's going to serve them well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think ultimately that's going to be a help more than a hindrance, being involved in close games. I can cite one very interesting example of this, and this was earlier this season, or this year, with the San Francisco Baseball Giants. They were involved in so many close games. And what did it do? It really prepared them for the playoffs. And meanwhile, you had the Phillies pretty much beating up teams to a pulp. They had their share of close games, but nothing like the Giants. And I don't know if they were prepared. I don't know if they were prepared for that kind of pitching, and ultimately the Giants won out. So you look at the Jets in a similar situation, maybe that helps them out. I mean, it's a devil's advocate situation. And Andrew, you know, you look at, you can also compare to the Patriots who've been blowing teams out. Now, and it's an NFL, so you're not going to get a lot of that this year anyway from any team. But tell me the biggest deficiencies. This is kind of a 180, but tell me the biggest deficiencies on this team now. Like, what would be the biggest glaring weakness on this team that could be easily exploited?
Well, I think it's what we were talking about, putting teams away. To me, putting teams away is fourth quarter pass rush. That's what wins. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens in a game, you can hold down a team, you know, for long periods, but you get tired. And if you don't have that fourth quarter pass rush, no matter who you play in the fourth quarter, all of a sudden they're going to get one play and they're going to start clicking. So, and that is the concern. You asked, is there a concern? That's no doubt about it, the concern. Because you look at the age, you know, our two guys going after the quarterback, Trevor Price and Jason Taylor, you know, they're both a little long in the tooth. They don't have young legs, and they haven't been getting there. So, you know, the Jets got to trick it up with the blitz, and the blitz has not been getting there. So now you're not even getting close to the quarterback, and they're carving you up in the fourth quarter. So that's the concern right now to me, and I'm sure to a lot of Jets fans.
Yeah,
and to piggyback on what you were saying there is, you know, you were at this past game, so you could probably see it better than I could on television. But it seemed to me in the fourth quarter that because the blitz hasn't been getting there, it was almost like on that last drive of the game, Rex went away from the blitz, only sent four guys, and was trying to play zone coverage. And I feel like it's trying to pound a square peg into a round hole. They brought in a whole bunch of players in the secondary who really aren't zone coverage guys. They're man-to-man guys, and there's been a lot of miscommunications in coverage. There's been a lot of open receivers, a lot of holes in the zone, and I feel like they, even if the blitz isn't getting there all the time, I almost feel like Rex needs to go back to it. And even if they lose getting, you know, because they got beat on a blitz, just be who you are and lose being who you are and don't be afraid of it. And I feel like they've been sitting back and playing, you know, too much zone, too much prevent defense, and it's been hurting them in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I thought about that too, Robert. It seemed to me like they were letting up towards the end of games. It's like when you switch up trying to protect a lead, that often comes back to bite you. And it's even though, as you said, the key would be just to stick with what works. We know what works. What they were doing in the first three quarters is what works. Why change? And I guess maybe that's a part of the learning process. And we've heard there's been reports that obviously Rex Ryan is not happy about the way these games have developed, and I think there's going to be some changes afoot to that. Do you think that there will now be a little more emphasis on not going prevent so much in the next couple of games?
Well, one thing that Rex sort of dropped as an aside in one of his during the week press conferences a few weeks ago is that Mike Pettine was calling more of the defenses this year, and so you almost have to wonder if that's going to change and Rex is going to go back to calling most of the defenses himself now. I don't know if one has anything to do with the other, but I did notice he said that a few weeks ago, and it does make me wonder if he's going to go back to taking more of a hands-on approach like he did last year.
Interesting, yeah. This is Dave in the City on Locks of the Week Radio. We're on with Andrew in Long Island and Robert in Virginia tonight with the Jets round table. And Andrew, we're looking at a team that's obviously playing well. This is another negative question. Let me rephrase it. When you have a game against a team like the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that's basically lost out in the season, there is an opportunity to really put an exclamation point on one team's dominance. What is it going to take for the Jets to get there and really just knock the living stuffing out of this team? Now, the Jets are at home, so this plays in their favor, and they certainly have a matchup advantage over the Bengals. They did it in the playoffs, so what would they do in order to beat them, if anything, that they don't already do now?
Well, if you can't get to the quarterback, like I said before, you're going to give up plays. And if the game's going on and we're not getting to the quarterback, then we're just going to have to outscore him again. Simple as that. I don't think there's any question. I mean, how many games do we have left? There's only, you know, three games in the playoffs, hopefully. We're just going to have to outscore everybody for the rest of the way. You know, hopefully we're suited to do that.
Well, I mean, there are no... Go ahead, Robert. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say with the Bengals, too, you look at, I think the biggest key, and this is what the Jets wanted to do this week, and it really didn't happen, is get on them early. I think this is the kind of team where if you go up 14-0, you know, 17-0 on them early in the game, they're going to quit. Marvin Lewis is at the end of his contract this year. Those guys, you know, I mean, you saw it in the Monday night game with the Steelers when the Steelers got up on them a bit. Ocho Cinco is screaming and yelling at people. And I just think if you get them on the road and you get up on them, you know, a couple of scores, they'll lay down. I don't see them at this point at 2-8 exactly battling back, especially being, you know, away from their families on Thanksgiving night. I just think this is one of the, if the Jets really, you know, want to have a rocking chair game, as we talked about before, get up a couple scores early and then let them quit.
Yeah, that's really good. Sound advice.
Yeah, I don't think we have any worries.
Yeah, I don't think
we have any worries this week. I think we're going to take care of them.
I have to agree on
no
that.
No problemo.
Yeah, I think this is the one team that I think will have no problem coming back on you. I mean, seriously, this team has definitely been defeated. Now, the Cowboys are an example of a team that looked defeated and have managed to come back, but think about this. They had a new coach in the last two games. There's no infusion anywhere. There's no new player coming in. There's no new change in management or coaching. Yeah, I don't see any reason. I mean, I hate to jinx it, but I think this may be finally a game that they can put away. Now, here's a question for you. Here's another angle I had on this. Where I was going with this question initially was to say, do you think that the Jets would try to open it up and really go down the field with their passing game, even though it's late in the season? Or do they pound the ball and just beat the Bengals to submission, which will end up being more effective in your eyes? We'll start with Andrew on this.
I think the Jets go into every game with a little bit of that conservative approach, because I don't think they want to start out throwing and have Sanchez make that mistake and then be down. You know, as long as you're tied, you're down 3 points, you keep trying to run the ball. That's the style. That's what we do. You get in trouble, you have to throw the ball, you throw the ball. But I don't see them coming out, you know, and airing it out down the field to start the game. I don't see that happening. I mean, I see us trying to run. We're a running team. It's going to be cold. It's going to be a night game. You want to keep their defense on the field and, you know, pound them. Hopefully it works this time. Hopefully we can run the ball because, you know, the running game is a little iffy the last few weeks.
Robert, comments on the run defense of the New York Jets. Now, this is something I'm not really as familiar with. We know their reputation is as a pass coverage team and a very good one at that. I've been told that they're more... people have pointed out to me that they excel best when they do man-to-man. I'm not sure how much man-to-man they actually use because I don't watch every game, you know. But can you say that they're more of a... Well, two questions. First of all... Oh, shoot, I lost the first one. But the second question was basically going to be, where are they most effective? I mean, Revis and that secondary is very good, but are they more of a zone, or are they more man-to-man, or are they a little mix of both?
Well, on the first point you brought up about the run defense, actually, the run defense actually has been very good. They've only allowed 100-yard rusher since Ryan has been the coach, as Maurice Jones-Drew last year. In the last 2 weeks, they've gone up against Arian Foster and Peyton Hillis and held them both under 100 yards. In terms of the pass defense, which was their absolute strength last year, they were impossible to throw against unless it was Peyton Manning in the second half of the AFC Championship game. But it hasn't quite been that way this year. I still think their strength is man-to-man. Whenever you have Revis and Cromartie on the outside, those guys can, man coverage, cover anyone. They match up pretty well this week because I think you'll see Revis on Owens because Owens is a much more physical receiver. I think Cromartie is a great matchup against Ocho Cinco. But the big problems for the Jets in pass coverage have really been when Revis was out, they had to play a lot of zone coverage because they didn't have a second corner who was a great man coverage corner. And like I said, whenever they felt that the blitz isn't getting there, they've just abandoned the blitz. They've gone a four-man rush and tried to play zone defense, and it hasn't been working. The other thing, their safeties aren't great in coverage, and Leonard in particular is very small. And against big tight ends, that's a huge problem. Tight ends always seem to have big games against the Jets. Benjamin Watson had a good game last week. Joel Dreesen absolutely killed them yesterday. And so to me, and Cincinnati's got a pretty good pass-catching tight end, that to me is the biggest weakness that the Jets have in coverage is, you know, their guys inside in the slot and their safeties trying to cover tight ends is a big vulnerability.
Fascinating, yes.
Yeah, you know, last year, if you think about it, what's the one thing that we don't have on the defense this year that we had last year? Kerry Rhodes. You know, I was reading today that Kerry Rhodes is pretty good covering tight ends. And now we have Leonard on it, and, you know, like Robert said, he's so short. You see so many times that he's, you know, he's jumping around doing nothing. And that seems to be our weakness this year. You know, we're good, like Robert said, on the edges. We cover the two wide receivers. The one and two wide receivers don't hurt us. It's in the middle of the field, the tight end, the guys running in the slot, the guys doing crossing patterns, that's what's killing us this year. You know, not so much screen passes. We're okay on those. We haven't really gotten hurt on those, but those tight ends, and that's not a good harbinger of things to come going into the Patriot game with their two young tight ends. They have two great tight ends, Patriots.
Yeah, I thought about that, too. The Patriots excel at running out those tight ends, and even guys like possession receivers like Wes Welker. I mean, they feast on down-the-middle passing. I saw it against my Steelers about the week previous to this one, and it's insane. But you know what's funny about that? The Jets came back on the Patriots, so the Patriots are just as good at giving up leads as they are at building them. And you saw the same thing. You saw the same thing against the Colts yesterday. And so you think about the Patriots, and people are really overrating this team. It is an outrageously overrated team right now. Their defense is terrible. And I think that's the only thing I would basically counter with when you talk about how the Patriots excel with their down-the-field passing. But it's a concern. I mean, in fact, just bringing up another point, the Jets play the Patriots coming up the week after this one. And, you know, it's obviously a big game. And, Robert, when you think about the team that's really good at the little dinks and dunks, you know, do you do anything differently than what you did last time against New England in order to stop them this time out? Or is there some kind of adjustment that needs to be made on Rex Ryan's part? This is 2 weeks away, but still, I'm interested to know what you have on that game.
Well, I think everything's going to be different. First of all, the Patriots have a completely different offense than the offense that they were running in week two because they've shipped off Randy Moss, they brought in Deion Branch, and they've really changed, you know, the way they operate their offense. And the other thing is that on both sides of the ball, the Patriots, the way Belichick coaches, they're going to come in and probably run an offensive and defensive game plan that the Jets have never seen before. And so it's going to be a huge chess match between the two coaching staffs and in terms of adjusting and figuring out what the other teams are doing. And your point on the Patriots is, you know, I think you can make the argument that every one of these teams is overrated. Every team has huge vulnerabilities. The Patriots, you know, to me, they can't run the ball and they can't stop the run. At some point, you would think that that's going to come back to bite them. But you can go through every single team in the league. You know, you can look at the top 10 teams in the league, and you can find two or three things that they can't do or ways that you can attack them. There really just isn't any team right now in football that is rock solid all the way through and that can't be attacked.
Yeah, and that's why coaching makes such a huge difference in the NFL nowadays. And I think it's great that the Jets now finally have a good coach. I mean, can you say that this is probably the first time in the last 20 years that you, maybe not 20 years, let's say 10, because I know about Parcells, obviously, in 98, but
the Parcells coaching staff was the best coaching staff that the Jets have had that I can remember. Mm-hmm. 97 and 99 was, you know, one time when you would turn on a Jets game, and no matter what, you know, they show the split screen of the coaches before the game, and you always just smiled because you were like, okay, we have an advantage in that one area. And I'm not going to put, you know, Rex and his coaching staff on that level, but it's certainly, you know, better than what we've had since Parcells.
Oh, no question about that. I mean, that one is clear. Andrew, would you even say, how would you then compare, I mean, we've mentioned the coaching, but can you say that this team is at least as good as that 98 team that went to the AFC Championship?
Yeah, I think you can. I don't see why you can't. That team is 12-4. I mean, we're going to probably be about 12-4, you know, 13-3. We're not going to have a super team to play. You know, that team had to play Denver. I was at that game also. And if you remember, Denver was undefeated at home. And there was not a person anywhere in that stadium who thought that the score wasn't going to be 21-0 after the first 10 minutes of the game. Because that's how every single Bronco game had went that year. And, you know, speaking of coaching, Belichick was our defensive coordinator that day, and he just had the most unbelievable game plan that day. And I remember it well because they were rushing, but what they were doing was they were half rushing and then jumping. And they knocked down, I think, four balls in the first half from Elway. And it was an unbelievable coaching job. And what happened was, in my opinion, I think they got altitude out because they were just, every play from about halfway through the third quarter on was just pitched to Terrell Davis, boom, 40 yards. I mean, it was like foils in a row, followed by a Jet turnover. So, you know, I could say right now that the quarterback is probably better on that team because Vinny had an MVP-type year. He was, I think he finished second or third in the MVP voting. They had the edge of running back that team with Curtis Martin, you know. I think this team has a good secondary. You know, I think we had Otis Smith playing in that spot, if I remember. But teams have been terrible. I would say yes.
That game is the most painful Jet game of my entire life. Vinny Testaverde so badly outplayed John Elway in that game. And the Jets, there were about four possessions in the first half of that game where the Jets could have totally blown that game open and turned the ball over. And the whole game changed on a blown coverage by Victor Green and that long pass to Ed McCaffrey, and that was that.
Yeah, he threw that ball into the wind. I remember it was hanging in the air. It was hanging. And it was just so frustrating. But, oh, the pain.
Oh, the pain indeed. This is Dave in the City on today with Robert in Virginia and Steve in Long Island, two very long-time loyal Jets fans. And if you are a Jets fan, You are loyal. There is no bandwagon for Jets fans to put for. I mean, I don't mean that as an insult. I mean that as a tribute, because it means that you've really gone through a lot. And like unlike the Giants fans that I referenced earlier, it really is great to see them succeed, because you know it's a lot of teams have to put up with a lot of stuff when you root for any football team. And for the Jets to be this good nowadays, it's a great feeling. And I think I'm really happy for the Jets community, let's say. Now, let's see. Now, I was going to ask Steve another question.
Thanks, Dave. That's nice of you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Nice. Most appreciate it. Now, I know that when Pittsburgh goes out to play the Jets in a couple weeks, I don't know how I'm going to feel about that. But it's going to be a good game. I think that's obvious. I'm sorry. I'm out of words.
Who did Pittsburgh have before that?
I actually think the Steelers are a tougher matchup for the Jets than the Patriots are, because the Steelers can stop the run.
Yep, one of the best running teams, if not the, I think they're still the best running run defense team in the NFL, if I recall correctly. I looked at the stats recently, showed them as number one, but that opens up a couple other things. Definitely true. It's going to be a good game though, and I mean I recall back to 2004, the Jets kind of outplayed the Steelers in that game. I have to be honest. But obviously the plays were made on the home side of the ball. That brings up another interesting question. Here's a question I was going to ask Andrew. How important is home field advantage going to be in the postseason? Because in the past, think about all these games. The game that they played against the Steelers in 04, that was on the road. The game that they played at Denver, again, obviously it was at Denver. So now I can't speak to the Browns game 86. Was that also at, was that at Shea? Was that at the Meadowlands? I can't recall. Oh, that was in Cleveland. So this is a very interesting.
Yeah, I was at the week before. Yeah, the week before they beat Kansas City. I was at that game at the Meadowlands, but the Cleveland game was in Cleveland.
Wow, how about that? Now, is it true that the Jets are undefeated in all time in playoff history at home? I seem to remember that stat someplace. If anyone knows,
I don't know.
I can't think of a home playoff game.
Doesn't sound like us.
Well, there haven't been very many chances. That's the difference.
You're going back to that 04 game. I was at that one too.
Oh wow!
Segues into your question, because the question was, is home field important? And I was at the Pittsburgh game in 04. I was at the Denver game in 98. I was at the Indy game last year. I was at the Raider game in 02 in Oakland. So, you know, you have to get these games at home. And Rex said it. Hard Knocks, first thing he said, first Hard Knocks show, lead the league in wins. Because that's what it's all about. You got to get the game at home. If you don't get the game at home, you're probably going to lose. You know, the 07 Giants only come around once in a while, even though it happens every once in a while. And home teams do lose playoff games. You have a really much better shot to win if you get those home games. You know, I wouldn't know because I've never had one. I don't know what it's like. I want to get that feeling this year. You got to lead the league in wins, or you got to get that home game.
Guys.
The one thing that I would say, though, and I would say this about both the Jets and the Giants, is, A, the one thing about their two quarterbacks is, for as good as they are, neither one of them throws the ball that well in the wind. And so it seems as though, you've noticed, neither one of these teams has played that great at home the last couple of years. And I think the Jets are 12-4 under Rex on the road. They've won 8 straight road games. Not necessarily saying that I'd rather play these games on the road. I just feel like, other than Indy, I'm not really sure how much. I mean, I don't want to play Indy in the dome. But, the other four teams that are all cold weather outdoor stadiums, I think any one of those teams could beat any of the other teams on the road in a playoff game.
Yeah, I think that's true. But that also speaks to the competitive level of the NFL today. I think it's just showing that there's a lot of good teams in the NFL, especially in the AFC. So, you know, these games are all going to be close. It's just the little things always make or break these playoff games to begin with. So I think that's a very good point you make there, Robert. Now, to Andrew's point about home field, I think it's absolutely critical. I mean, look at what happened with New Orleans last season. They were practically unbeatable at home. Now, I know that it was a tough game with Minnesota, and Minnesota in many ways outplayed New Orleans, but what got them the win? Probably the home field. I mean, it helps that Favre had the interception at the end of near the end of the overtime, which basically ruined the game for him. But That would that have happened if he was playing that game in, let me think, in Minneapolis? I don't know. I don't know. And I want this to happen. I want this to. I want there to be an AFC Championship at the Meadowlands, because poor Andrew's been traveling all over the friggin' country to go see these AFC Championships. Let's see him, have him go travel down the street.
I didn't even see that damn game. Because I was flying home the Minnesota game.
Oh wow! How about
actually,
that?
Actually, it was 28 all. It was 28 all at half. I was in an airport. I had to get on a plane, and that's all I knew until I landed.
I watched that AFC Championship game at a bar and got so drunk, and then stayed there and watched the Minnesota game, and I was so bitter about the Jets losing. All I wanted was for Brett Favre to lose. And I was so happy when he threw that damn interception. And in terms of whether or not it would have happened if he was home or on the road, one thing I can tell you about Brett Favre, they could have played that game on Mars and he would have thrown an interception.
You know what? In actuality, you're right.
He could throw him anywhere.
Nah, I think you're right about that. I forgot all about 2007, the NFC Championship game against the Giants. He was home for that when he threw a pick in that one in overtime.
He played great in that game, though.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he had a great season altogether, but, you know, it's always, like I said, it's the little things in the NFL that seem to count. Robert in Virginia, Stephen Long Island joining me in the city today. We're getting giddy here. I mean, this is getting good. Now, I mean, Thanksgiving is a great way to reward these teams, have a Thanksgiving game. Granted, it's not Thanksgiving Day, but it's Thanksgiving night, which is pretty good. I mean, they get the game at home. I mean, that's pretty cool. And meanwhile, the Patriots, would you now say that the Patriots are now the team to beat? I mean, the other team, I should say, the rival, the competing team in the AFC East. Is that all there is left? Because remember, at the beginning of the season, the Dolphins were in the mix, too. I can't even think of the third team. Oh, Buffalo was terrible. So, is it now just basically a two-team race there for the top of the AFC?
Yep.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean,
Miami's dead. They just have no quarterback. They just got shut out. They're nowhere to go.
Yeah, special teams are awful.
Sorry.
It's a tough situation. Now, as far as the numbers one and two seeds in the AFC. Pittsburgh had a big win this week against the Raiders, so they might be still in this thing. But how do the Colts factor into this? So this is kind of off the topic, but are they, because of that loss? That was a pretty devastating loss for the Colts, to be honest. And can they still have any kind of home field advantage in the playoffs? And this is significant because they're pretty good at home.
Well, They have to play San Diego next, I believe, the Colts.
Oh, boy.
That's Monday night game next week.
Oh, my goodness. And there's San Diego. There's another team.
And look at San Diego. They're flying right now.
Yes, they are. I mean, they're dominating the game against... Well, actually, the game's over now, but they absolutely crushed the Broncos tonight. San Diego would make another run at it. Can you believe... Well, I mean, can you believe they're going to do it again? It looks like they could do it again. I mean, they might run in and take this division after all. Robert, do you think that... What are their chances of winning the division at this point? Like 50-50?
Yeah, it's got to be, because I don't think any of the other teams in the division are any good. And, you know, I mean, what's it going to take, 8 or 9 wins to win that division?
Yeah, probably.
I don't think it's going to be that day, you know. And you know, Rivers, for, you know, all of him running his mouth or whatever, is a hell of a quarterback. And, you know, he's clearly the best quarterback in that division. And, you know, that's the one good thing, is that if they make the playoffs, it'll give me a chance to wager against North Turner in a playoff game. So that's certainly one positive about them making the playoffs. But in terms of the Colts, I think the Colts are probably looking, you know, at a 3 seed. I don't think they're going to get, you know, one of the byes. Certainly they're not going to get home field, because I think both the Jets and the Patriots are going to win on Thanksgiving. You know, New England's in Detroit. Not that, you know, Detroit's much better. I think the Patriots find a way to win that game, and as we discussed earlier, I think the Jets will take care of the Bengals at home, which means whoever wins the Monday night game between the Jets and the Patriots is going to come out of that game 10-2. And I don't think Indianapolis will be able to catch whichever team wins that game. Whichever team wins that game pretty much has the inside track on getting the number one seed in the AFC.
Yeah, I can't. I think that's it. I mean, that's why this game is going to be huge when they play. I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. So now, a final question for each of you. I'll start with Andrew. For the Jets, these are the final remaining games. We established Cincinnati's probably not going to be that big of a deal. We know about the New England game. After that, it's Miami at home, Pittsburgh on the road. I can't wait for that one. And Chicago at Chicago, and then Buffalo. Of those teams, which one's going to be the toughest matchup and which one's going to be the most dangerous matchups? Meaning that it's a team that, you know, you wouldn't expect going in to be tough, but they could surprise.
Well, Chicago. I mean, if you look at what they've done the last few weeks, and then now they lead the league in points allowed. So you got to give them their, you know, give them their respect. They've played phenomenal, the 7-3, and they have a great defense, and we got to go into their building, you know. And that's a team that, I mean, we know right now at New England, at Pittsburgh, you know, both games you could lose, no doubt about it. You take care of the rest of your games, you'll have a good seed going in. You're not going to get home field. But that Chicago game is the one you got to watch out for. I think we can take care of everybody else.
Yeah, I kind of with you on that. I mean, Chicago, I just looked it on the schedule and it seemed like a dangerous game. It's like, it really popped out at me. I was like, wow, that could be a tough one. Robert, now, between New England and Pittsburgh, you were saying to me that Pittsburgh might be the tougher matchup. Is that about right?
Yeah, just, look, I mean, New England is always tough, especially when you have to play them, you know, in their building. But to me, all these teams in the AFC are so close that it really comes down to who... you know, how well you match up against another team. For example, Pittsburgh is a, you know, doesn't match up well at all against New England. For some reason, you know, it's just a terrible matchup for the Steelers. Whereas I just think because the Jets have such a strength in being able to line up and run the ball, and I don't think the strength of the Patriots' defense is being able to stop the run, that, you know, that's a better matchup for the Jets than going against the Steelers. Who I think, I don't know if the Jets can run the ball against the Steelers, and then that puts an awful lot on the Jets' passing game. So I just think that, you know, some teams match up better against others, and I think for the Jets, the Patriots are a better matchup than the Steelers.
Very interesting point. Dave in the City, Locks of the Week Radio with Andrew in Long Island and Robert in Virginia from the Checker Football Pick'em Podcast at footballpick'em.podbean.com. I've been kindly asked by Checker to make that notation, but I was going to do it regardless. It's a great show, by the way. You guys doing a show tomorrow? No, on Wednesday?
Yeah, we're doing a show on Wednesday. Thankfully, none of us will be traveling on Wednesday for the holidays.
That's so. A great job out of all
we
you
are,
guys.
We are going through a show.
Great job, great job. All right, and let's bring in now to the program our friend Dave in Queens, who we've heard from recently here on this program. Obviously another Jets fan in the fold. Dave, this is Andrew, who's also known as Gator, and you know, I think you've heard from Robert as well on this program. Go ahead and introduce yourself to our audience, Dave. Well, Dave, let me put it to you another way. Dave, give me initial thoughts on the Jets season up to date. Are you there, sir?
Well, if you're talking to me, this is Chris in Syracuse.
Oh, I got it wrong. Epic fail on Dave's part. Chris in Syracuse. Now, you are a Dolphins fan, and I guess we I hope we weren't too harsh on the Dolphins, but I guess the truth can sometimes hurt. So you're on with Andrew and Robert. What's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to say that you guys are absolutely right. In fact, you might not be harsh enough. Nowheresville, this team is lost. Sperano is lost. They can't even find Nowheresville. He needs to be fired. I'm sick of seeing him. That was an awful game on Thursday night. I'm glad it was on NFL Network and nobody could see it because nobody needed to be watching that. He's lost. I liked him for a while, but he needs to go. It's bad enough I get to see Pittsburgh University being in the Big East and look at Wanstead, who couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag.
Andrew may agree with me, but one of my darkest days as a Jets fan was the day the Dolphins fired Dave Wanstead. I was hoping he was going to be around forever.
Oh, man.
I don't know how much you can blame Sperano for that loss. You know, down to his third-string quarterback. You take any team and put the third-string quarterback out there, how good they're going to do, you know? Not too good.
They ran the ball six times. They have two very good running backs. They touched the ball six times. You had the third-string quarterback throwing the ball all game.
Well, and another thing I think you're seeing with Miami is you're seeing the cycle that takes place, and we know it well, whenever Bill Parcells comes in and runs your team. As he comes in, he fixes it. He makes it a whole hell of a lot better than he was. But then after 2 years, all everybody's talking about is Bill halfway out the door? Does he have a foot out the door? Is he leaving? What's going to happen? And from everything I hear, after this season, he's gone. He's going to be completely out the door. And the new owner is very close with Carl Peterson. And if that happens, then he's going to get rid of Ireland and Sperano, and they're going to bring in all the old Chiefs guys who have a completely different way. And so it's going to be rebuilding the team all over again.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. I could already see that. But on a good note, Nick Saban in Alabama has 2 losses this year already, and not enough bad things can happen to that guy.
Oh, man, that era was kind of one to forget, wasn't it? I mean, Saban on the Dolphins, my goodness, that was nuts. That was crazy. Well, I mean, to Chris's point about the Dolphins, they've got some work to do. There were some pieces in place. I guess the biggest problem to me has been, well, not only special teams, but the fact is that, you know, that they put too much emphasis on Henny and he just hasn't panned out. And I guess it's as simple as that. And, you know, you can't really control that. I mean, you make your pick. You can't completely predict who the best quarterbacks are going to be. So, you know, you just got to roll the dice and do it over again. And the Niners learned that lesson, and many teams will learn that lesson, Chris. And I think if...
Well, one thing, Dave, I got to say is a year ago, you know, Mike Francesa, who has his show in New York, made it very clear that he thought that, you know, Chad Henne was going to be much better than Mark Sanchez. And I think we all know that with his history of correct prognostications, we're all shocked and stunned that hasn't passed. Panned out, because he's never wrong about anything.
I got to hand it to you. That's a good point.
I thought he was going to be good, too. I'm kind of shocked about that myself. I really am. I thought he was a good pro prospect, and I don't know what his problem is. He can't pull the trigger, it seems. You know, it seems like he's got wide open receivers, and he just can't get into them. Real shame.
I couldn't agree more. I just wanted to stop in and say hello, let off some steam about the Dolphins, not to hijack your show. You guys have done a great job, and enjoy the AFC East.
Thanks, man. Keep
all right, man. Be good yourself, Chris. All right. Chris in Syracuse, I believe, joining us in the city. And boy, I can't believe I blew that one. I thought it was Dave because of I thought the numbers were similar, but probably not. I just wasn't. You know how, like, when you anticipate a play and it doesn't develop and you really look foolish out there, like, you're kind of, like, passing to a non-existent receiver because you expected him to finish off his route and get there? That's kind of what happened there on the telephone tonight. Boy, that's crazy. You know, that guys, it's been really fun having you guys on the show. Now, we're not done yet. We got a couple minutes to go. But we'll start with Andrew on this. Give me some final thoughts about this team, what you've seen, where it's going, and how you're feeling. Go ahead, Andrew. What do you got?
Well, team's going great right now. I got no complaints. You're not going to hear me complain about 8-2. We're not going to apologize, as Rex says. And on to the next game. What else can you say? Just got to hope to fix some of the jailbreak going on in the secondary. You know, hopefully we can cover the tight ends a little better and do a better job. But I'm confident, and I think it's going to be a hell of a year.
All right, Robert.
I can't disagree with anything Andrew said. The one thing that I will say that's been very impressive to me this year is the maturation of Mark Sanchez, both on and off the field. I read something last week that since the Jets are playing on Thanksgiving night, and they're not going to be able to do Thanksgiving dinner with their families, Mark Sanchez treated 120 people, all the members of the organization and their families, he treated them to Thanksgiving dinner for the whole Jets organization at Trump National Golf Club. And they had, you know, all kinds of things for the kids and everything. Pretty impressive. I'm not sure that I would have had my head out of my ass that much to do something like that when I was 24 years old. I think it's pretty impressive the fact that, you know, you listen to Braylon Edwards and Santonio Holmes talk about him, about how he's the first one in and the last one to leave, how much of a leader he's become, how much of a perfectionist he's become. It's really a good sign because I know, you know, people have tried to paint him with the same brush as Matt Leinart, that he's a party guy, and I don't think that's the furthest thing from the truth. I mean, everything I've heard about the guy is that it's football, 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 and he just wants to win. And I couldn't be happier right now with him.
Yeah, I love what I'm seeing, too. I mean, there is a major difference between Sanchez and Leinart, even from when he was playing at SC. You saw intangibles with this guy on the field in college that really just sparked my attention. And the only other guy I remember seeing this with is a guy by the name of Matt Ryan, who played for Boston College. Look at him now. He is having a fantastic season over in Atlanta. Guys, it has been spectacular to have you both on. I want to wish you guys the best of luck, you all and the Jets and the Jets Nation, I guess, whatever you call your fan base. Best to all of you, and happy holiday as far as Thanksgiving. Thanks again for coming on. Be good to yourself, Andrew, Robert. It's just been fun. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for having me. Have a good Thanksgiving, guys.
Thank you, guys. Thank
you. Same to you guys.
Same to you as well. All right, so that's Robert in Virginia and Steve in Long Island. I'm sorry, Andrew in Long Island joining us in the program today. The Jets Roundtable, everyone. Thank you very much for listening, all. And we hope that you all have a wonderful Thanksgiving. No program on Wednesday, by the way. So we will see you again about a week and a couple of days from now. So enjoy your Thanksgiving, everyone. Be thankful for all that you have. And until then, we will see you next time.